Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Everybody.
Why not? I had to start.
You gotta do it. You gotta do it. You gotta keep it as normal as possible.
How are you, Eddie? How was your week?
It was good. It wasn't a bad week.
It wasn't a bad week?
No, it wasn't a bad week.
You had a good time.
I had a good time.
Did it rain a lot here? I was gone. How was the show last week?
It was fun. Yeah, I had a buddy in here. Runs a comedy festival in San Luis Obispo. It's nice. So
say that five times really fast.
San Luis Obispo.
Is that the one you've done? You've done that before.
Yeah, I've done that. It was fun. Okay.
Cool. So he drove from San
Francisco? No, he lives here.
You're like, dude, yeah, nobody's going to make that sound.
You want to drive 3 hours to do my free radio show? Please?
He's like, no, that doesn't happen. And who was your co-host? I heard Jimmy was,
Jimmy,
right?
Paulson, our one-time caller.
How'd he do?
He did great. He did really good.
I heckled you guys.
He did. I know. I was waiting for you to call.
I was going to call. I was actually in a movie at Sundance. I'll talk more about Sundance next week, but... so how do you do? He passed the test?
He's I put it out there. If you call in the radio station, you're in the running to be a co-host. So he called in once, so that's what happens.
That's awesome.
But
well, tonight we're going to do a very different show. I got some pretty tragic news last night. My saxophonist of the past 6 or 7 years passed away, which was a pretty tragic event for me. I came home from an amazing week at Sundance, and then last night I found out this horribly tragic news, and I didn't really feel like interviewing anybody and being super chipper about music. I just kind of wanted to celebrate Zane Moussa's life. Yeah. This guy was a profound musician. You know, I want to talk about how I met him. The funny thing is, I met Zane and I met another musician named Kamasi at like a jam a long time ago, and I think I confused which one was which. Like, Zane is Palestinian and Kamasi is black. So when I was, trying to find a sub for a gig, I remember calling Zane, and he just, had that
I want the black Zane. Can I have the black Zane, please?
He just had this vibe that was, he sounded like a black dude. And I'm like, oh, this must be that guy, you know? He just had that cool jazz musician kind of vibe. And
then the Pakistani shows up.
Yeah, I was so confused.
You're like, oh, okay.
You know, I never told him that.
Different.
The funny thing is, I never told Zane that, but when he showed up at the door... There was a minute where I was like, oh, shit. Oh, yeah. This guy.
Oh, I met the black guy. What?
But, I was so happy he could do the gig. And then he came in, and from the moment he played, it's very hard to come into the NK band and impress the guys in the band. I mean, they know the music is hard, and they know that they're seasoned musicians. And, all the guys kind of know, some of the better players in Los Angeles. So when you walk into that rehearsal room, and I know I've heard other session players say it that have, been doing sessions for years, that it's a little intimidating to walk into that room. And Zane walked in, cool as a bear in a pool, and, he just, as soon as he started playing, all of our heads turned, And I knew initially right then and there, whatever he was throwing down, I wanted in the band, mm-hmm. So, we played this rehearsal, and then we ended up playing this gig at the Home Depot Center for the Chivas, the soccer team.
Yeah.
And I remember my bass player, we just played, and he was just on fire the whole gig. And after the gig, I think about a week later, we were in rehearsal, and we had our A-squad sax player in the rehearsal, and he was late to a rehearsal. And my bass player, Matt, was like, dude, we should really get Zane as the sax player. And I was like, yeah, man, he was pretty insanely good, And Matt was like, yeah, he had a great vibe, and his playing was pretty off the chain. So, I never told anybody about that story, that I thought it was a different sax player altogether. And it was kind of like that serendipitous thing that happened. And you know, I called Zane maybe a couple weeks later, and I said, hey, man, I really loved your playing, and I would love for you to join the band. He was like, cool, man. I really actually love playing with the band. You guys sound great. He's like, I've actually seen you guys a bunch at the House of Blues, and I wanted to play with you guys forever, and I would love to be a part of this. And he, you know, he was in the band for years, and he just, every time he came to rehearsal, no matter what time it was, no matter if it was early in the morning, sometimes we'd have early morning rehearsals because everybody's schedules are super late at night. He would come in, and it was like lightning in a bottle. You know, he would just play his ass off, play his heart out. And, you know, not every musician does that. You know, it's just, I definitely know that he raised the game of a lot of us in the band just because he always brought it, no matter what. It's like it didn't matter if nobody was listening. He played like it was the last time he was ever going to play. So that was a big inspiring thing for me, yeah. I think, you know. And Eddie, you videotaped a lot of our House of Blues shows.
I've seen him live a lot.
And, you know, he did a lot of things that I was really blown away with. His older brother was on life support, and, you know, on the day that his family decided to pull the plug, he called me, and we had a House of Blues show, and he said, hey, man, I can't come. I can't, there's no way. I'm just a mess. My brother passed away, and this is just really... it's hitting me hard. I said, dude, don't worry about it. It's okay. Just, you know, take your time and come when you can to a rehearsal or a gig. And we go to the gig, and Zane shows up, and he comes to the dressing room, and I was so shocked, and I was so happy because no one else knew what was going on, you know? And yeah. He said, you know, I wanted to be with my musical family, and I wanted to play. I need to play.
Sometimes that's the best way to get through things.
Do you feel like that with comedy? Like, it's a complete therapy? Like,
well, yeah, because you're in the moment, you're out of your head, and you're just... I mean, anytime you're performing, I mean, you're not sitting in that space where your thoughts are so
marinating.
Loud.
Marinating, yeah.
You know, you can like just kind of...
Misery.
I mean...
Yeah. I don't think I could play a gig if I was in Zane's situation, though. I mean, music is my therapy. Writing, I think, is a bigger therapeutic release for me. But Zane showed up, and... I remember I pulled the band guys into our dressing room when Zane was like warming up outside. I said, listen, I'm going to throw him a lot of solos tonight. And I said, you know, his brother passed away today. And they were just like, oh, my God. And they're like, I can't believe he's here. And I said, yeah. So let's not really talk to him about it. He doesn't really want to talk about it. But I just so you know, I'm going to throw him a lot of solos. And it was one of the shows that he played his ass off. I mean, he always played his ass off, but... He really dug deep that night, and yeah. I just kept throwing him solos, and I just remember standing next to him and listening, and, you know, while he was playing, I would just tell him I loved him, you know, like things that the crowd would never be able to pick up on. I would never say it into a microphone, and just, like, encouraging him, telling him how badass he was, and he was always so chill about it, you know, yeah. Like, that's the one thing that was so remarkable about him. If I could play half as good as Zane, I'd be making a huge parade about it.
Well, that's one thing I noticed with the show. I mean, the shows I've been to of your guys that I've, you know, recorded or whatever, he was always, like, the coolest guy on stage.
Yeah, because he was just, like...
It like,
was
the like, most laid-back. Really, like, yes. Does he even realize he's on stage right
dude,
now?
And that's that the thing. Type he was, like that cool... Laid back. He was laid-back. He was always like, yo, you want a chair?
Like almost like he... You wouldn't be surprised if he walked out in a robe and slippers. Like, that's how laid-back the guy was. I didn't know him personally, but just, like, he put off that vibe, like...
Yeah, like he's chill. He's chill.
Like,
yeah.
Nothing affects
yeah,
him.
Yeah, and the amazing thing was, like... You know, it's like, it was almost intimidating how chill he was because he would just kind of like, you know, he wouldn't let a lot of people in, you know, and I, when I got to know him better and he did let me in, it was almost like a reward, you know, to be able to call him a close friend and to hang with him and just kind of, you know, we spent a lot of time laughing and we spent a lot of time going through disappointing shows or turnouts, you know, that he was always super positive for and he was just always... He was always a great spirit, you know.
Just
so,
shows you how little you know people, though.
Isn't that? That's what's crazy. I mean, honestly, like...
how much people can hurt inside. And you're like, that guy's so cool, dude, and so relaxed.
That's
and
what
like,
I've
you
learned.
Have no idea.
And you know, the thing is, it's like depression is... It's real, man. It is a real... I mean, I've always known it's real. I've had friends that have gone through it. I still have, you know, close people in my life that are going through it and battling it. But this really hit home because I think, you know, when you're in a band, it is like a marriage. You know, you're married to these guys, you know, for better or worse, and you go through these things as a collective unit, you know. It's like you go through every experience as a group. Yeah. You don't just have a different experience. You may have a different mix, you know, when you're on stage and you can complain about it after the show, but as a collective, you're experiencing everything together. And that's what I loved about being in a band. And having Zane in the band was, it was a monumental experience. I actually learned so much about music from the way he played, the way he approached things. And, yeah, I want to play a song first off the only record that I actually have him on. It's called Music of the New Day. And he would come in and just throw down these little sax little parts or licks. And I wanted to start with this song because he just did these little fills. He didn't have like a big sax solo. One thing I always loved and admired for Zane for is like he always respected the songs, the songwriting, the melodies. And he would play in these holes that would just be perfect. And he did all this like on the fly. None of it was edited. We did all this to analog tape. So he just did this just as a feeling. And it just felt so simple to him, you know. Mm-hmm. To me, it was like this profound moment. Like, how did you know to play that perfect little lick right in that perfect little spot that nobody was playing, you know, without knowing if anybody was going to play there? So one thing I loved about him is he just had the instincts of somebody that was like 95 years old and had lived on this planet 10 times over. So I'm going to play a song. This one's called Speak Up. This is from Music of the New Day, and this is featuring a little lick here and there by Zane Moussa.
Say what you wanna say. Don't care if you're gonna stay. Do what you gotta do. What's this mean from me to you? Show face now. Don't be a coward. Be who you gotta be. Don't sell out now. The mind, but then you find you are lost. Yeah, yeah. If you wait till then, it's not the Zen. You speak up, set him let it in. Show face now, don't be a coward. Be who you gotta be, don't sell. Find your way to me, listen to the wind and sea. Stand up for your own beliefs. Don't speak with someone else's tongue. Say what you wanna say. Speak up now, your time is come.
It gets me choked up listening to him play, to be honest. Yeah, it was just like little things he did, like that little tail end lick on saxophone that he would just like play, and it was like the perfect ending to the song, you know?
Yeah.
Little things. He just had this instinct about him. Like, it was just, it was incredible. Making this record was one of my most exciting parts of my career so far. For one, I'd finally got the lineup of the band to where I wanted it to be. It was interesting enough as an instrumentation unit, you know, with a harmonica and saxophone and bass and drums. And I had all the right players. I had all the right people and the personalities and even the right vision collectively to make this record. And this record, the funny thing is, I wanted to make this record for years. I knew the name of it. I think I announced it in 2006, and I don't think we recorded it till 2012. So the funny thing about Zane joining the band when he did and being a part of it, it's kind of like the universe saying, okay, this kid's going to come into your life and just like kick you in the ass and give you the greatest stuff that you could imagine, you know, a saxophonist doing. And it was amazing. You know, it was such a funny experience too, because my harmonica player was having to play with Zane on a lot of these lines, but my harmonica player was flying in from New York, so Zane would kind of like play the lines, and then Marcus would have to like learn the lines, you know, on the fly.
Right.
So Marcus, poor Marcus, used to always just sit there and bitch and complain. He was like, man, he's playing these parts that he's like improvising the parts, and they're so ornate and crazy that it's like causing me to lose my hair to learn. You know, like he'd be sitting in the studio and he'd have to like shed these parts that he never knew he had to learn. And, you know, it was always, the funny thing is, like, you know, some of the guys in the band were like, you know, you always let Zane off the hook a little bit, you know. But the thing is, I always knew he was a musical genius. And I would tell him that. I would say, you know, I've been in the company of some incredible musical geniuses in my life, and I just always sensed that Zane was a musical genius. So I would tell him, you know, like, mostly because I wanted him to know that, like, he deserved to hear it. He needs to know. Yeah. He needed to know, like, how good he really was, because I could also see, like, his mind tearing him apart, like, telling him that he maybe wasn't as good as he thought he could be, you know? And he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. So I would tell him, I would say, man, you know, you are a musical genius. Like, you just need to know that. I would tell him from my heart to his, just so he would know how special it was for him to be in my band. And it was an honor. It was just such an incredible honor. And the funny thing is, you know, he'd play like nobody's business. He'd play these incredible sax lines. He'd come up with crazy new parts. He would play these lines and solos that were just unbelievable, to the point where there would be so many shows, even in rehearsals, where I would just stand there and listen to them. Like, it's rare that, you know, when you play in a band, you know, you always want to impress each other, you know? But it's rare when you can just sit there and just, like, marvel at somebody's musicianship. And I found myself doing that a lot with Zane's solos and hearing him play. He was never off pitch. And the saxophone is an instrument that is not intonated completely perfectly. No instrument really is, but the saxophone is really not intonated perfectly. And it's all based on the wind flow and also the, you know, the mechanisms of the, you know, all the, you know, keys and stuff like that. But Zane never played out of tune. I always noticed that. He was always right on. He was always playing with this fire that I'd never, it was just unprecedented, you know. So working with him in the studio, and when the guys would also tell me, like, hey, man, you know, he comes in late, you know, like, well, what's up, you know? And I would always, you know, I'd say, in my mind, I would, you know, kind of soften the blow for them. I'd say, no, yeah, I'll talk to him. But I always knew, it's like, you cannot put a genius in a box. You can't give him lines that he can't, you know. It's like, I always knew I just had to, like, let him come and go as he pleased, let him fly. I would, you know, if he didn't learn a part, I'd be like, yo, man, you didn't learn this part. But I always knew, like, you know, I had to, you know, kind of cater to him a little bit in a different way, because I knew, like, I wanted to always make this a challenge for him. I wanted to make the music fun for him. And I wanted, most importantly, for him to feel extremely creative. And, man, he was just always pushing the limits of what he could play on a song. Even within the confines of, you know, music is built on time. It's built in measures or beats. And the things that he would play in restricted numbers of beats in a measure, it was unbelievable. I mean, people like John Coltrane did that, Charlie Parker. And, you know, I really saw him on that wavelength. It was kind of, it was crazy, man, you know. And then, like, you know, he'd play this crazy solo. We'd sit in rehearsal, and he would start telling this silly story, like a funny joke anecdote, and he would follow it up with a laugh that sounded like Barney Rubble. You know, it was just like the best, you know. And that's kind of like one of the things I wanted to do tonight, was just I wanted to talk about Zane, and I want to talk about depression too, you know, because this one really hit home for me. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever lost anybody to depression?
No one close. I mean, I've known a couple people that have, but no one super close.
The funny thing is I've come into contact with maybe two musical geniuses, one named John Scott Wakefield, who put a guitar in my hands, and he was a prodigy. Played bass like, you know, Victor Wooten and, you know, Jaco Pastorius. He was just an unbelievable kid, and he was 18 and put a guitar in my hands. He saw a lot of potential in me. He was the reason I started a band. He saw what I wanted out of life. And then about, you know, 3 or 4 years later, no, it was maybe 6, 7 years later, when I was making a record, I got a phone call that he passed away, and he was partying, and he, you know, he ended up not waking up. And, you know, that was hard because I was like the beginning of my career. But this one's a little bit different because I had spent so much time. I'd only known John for a year where we lived together. Right. And, you know, this one was different because, you know, I'd traveled the country with this guy. One of my favorite experiences so far was playing with Ben Harper at Summerfest in front of 10,000 people. And one of my favorite pictures of my entire career is this one picture. I put it on Facebook. I put it on the NK Band website, on the NK Band Facebook page. It's just a picture of Zane, myself, and my drummer standing in front of 10,000 people towards the end of our show. And it's just like this magical moment that we just shared. And we were all super tired. We got up at like 4 in the morning to get to the plane. And it was super surreal. And I just remember, you know, we'd played so many shows with nobody in the audience, and then started playing House of Blues shows and doing that as well. But right after we walked off, I remember, you know, I was like, that was insane. Like, I was thinking, that was so awesome. And I just turned to Zane, and before I even asked him anything, like, what'd you think? You know, because that was an incredible experience. He said, that was cool, man. You know, like, it was like all that work, it was broken down to this one little, yeah, that was cool, yeah, that was all right, man, that was cool, you know? And I was just like, man, saxophones, they're so cool. Even when they're excited, they don't show that they're excited, you know what I mean? And, you know, I just remember just sharing these incredible moments with him, recording, and, you know, the one thing I really want to urge, one thing I've learned from this experience is, like, you know, if you're ever feeling down, man, I know that's the last thing you want to do is reach out to somebody and just, like, ask for help. Yeah. But, man, that's what connects us all to each other. Like, it is better to ask somebody for help and ask somebody for an ear or a shoulder to cry on or a hug or whatever it is than to think that, you know, going down a darker road is the better way. And it's
But sometimes you're in so much pain you can't see it. You can't see that, you know? You're so hurting you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why people do it. I mean,
you know,
seems like the best alternative to take.
A really close friend of mine, he said, you know, sometimes with situations like that, it's like, you know, you always think that the person isn't, you know, he's suffering as he's going through this experience, but you know, it's also like you have to also think that they're not hurting anymore. And that's actually a relief of a thought. Like, whatever he was going through, I'm happy he's not going through it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, because, sorry, go ahead.
No, you have to, like, take comfort in the fact that they aren't in pain anymore. They're not suffering anymore.
That has been a comforting thought.
Depression's a real thing. It's a chemical thing in your brain, and you can't control it.
And I think it's weird that nobody talks about it. You know, like, it's like not something that you can
talk because people just chalk it up like, oh, you just get over it. You can't, it's not something you get over. No. It's not like you know, it's not something that just didn't go right and you're okay, now I just gotta wait for the next good thing to happen and I'll feel better. It's not that way.
It affects
the way you perceive the world.
Yeah. It affects the way you interact. It affects the way you think about yourself. It
affects everything. It's a chemical thing in your brain. The same way as, you know, when you feel happy.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a chemical reaction in your brain. It's, you know, depression is, it's a weird thing we don't know about, and it's still very taboo for a lot of people to even.
Well, I want to change that. I'll tell you, going through this experience definitely makes me want to change that. I want to have the conversation.
I think our generation and younger generations are more accepting that way. I think older generations view depression as something that you should just get over.
Right.
Like, I don't, you know, I think people are becoming more and more aware of that, you know, with Robin Williams and stuff like that. Like,
it's a big thing.
Like, someone who, like him, who had everything.
Right.
You know, she
and had nothing. At the
and
same
had nothing
time.
The same day. He was surrounded by everyone and felt completely alone. I mean, like it's a chemical thing. It's a serious medical condition, the same as cancer or heart disease or anything else.
But it's not looked at in the same way, which is bullshit to me.
Because mental health is not looked at in this country that way. Mental health is looked at as something like, oh, you can just you'll get over it. It's not safe. Like with heart disease, we can see like.
You can see an X-ray and say, "Oh,
you can take
this.
You can take a blood test. Oh, your cholesterol's high. We got to change this. You know, you have cancer. We can find the tumor. We can treat it. It's like, but it's in your brain, and people are just like, well, just get over it. You feel bad. You're feeling sad. Just get over it. It's an emotion. It's not a tangible thing. People just think it's an emotion. It's not. It's not.
And I've learned that. And I've always known that. To be honest, I just
it physically affects the composition of your brain. They've done studies of people who've been depressed over long periods of time, and their brain looks different.
How does it look different? That's interesting.
It's shrunken in certain places. I mean, it's just different parts of the brain are shrunken, or there's not as many. I mean, it's different. It physically alters the brain.
Wow.
That's what depression can do.
And I think, I think depression, people get depressed. I think everybody gets depressed on some level.
There's being down, and then there's being like clinically depressed.
Clinically depressed, exactly.
Where it's a medical condition.
And I think it connects us, but then it gets to a point where people just don't, it's like what you said, they don't acknowledge how severe it really can be. And for the thing that really, I mean, Zane and I were very close. I mean, to be honest, I think in the band we were probably, he and I were probably the closest of anybody to Zane in the band. You know what I mean? We would spend a lot of time talking or laughing or shooting the shit, and I got to know him. I got to know him really well and knew his background. And the funny thing is, that, we had Marcus, who's our harmonica player. He was from, he's Jewish, and then we had Zane in the band, who was Palestinian. You know what I mean? And like having Zane in the band, honestly, it having both of them in the band and seeing how they work together. And seeing how they created something beautiful together and with us. And this band is so eclectic. It's just ethnic heavy. We'll say that. It just showed me like how beautiful cultures and people and generations can come together and make something together as a unit and make something beautiful, And in a lot of ways, he was like this firecracker he was like this firework that was always on all the time. And it was like, always a fireworks show as soon as I gave him a solo in the shows or whatever. And sometimes it would be like the catalyst for me to like loosen up or just get into the zone. The funny thing is about this next song I want to play. It's called "I'll Stand Alone." This was the first song we got some radio airplay off from. But this was one of the songs I remember telling him, like, listen, this is not going to be a 10-minute solo. I need you to play me something beautiful, something simple, and it's going to be short. And he played this solo that honestly, it will forever be the part, in this little solo section. And I'll always think of you, Zane. Whenever you play this song, whenever we play this song, I'll always think of you playing this part. So here it is, "I'll Stand Alone."
I'll stand alone to adore you. I'll stand alone, yeah, waiting for something more. I'll stand alone if my heart breaks. I'll stand alone, yeah, no matter how long it takes. Troubled man, make my I'll stand alone, living without you. I'll stand alone, yeah, knowing what to do. Those endless nights set my mind. When everybody thinks you're wrong, but you're not. Carry
So funny. I was just thinking about, and whenever I rehearsed with Zane, you would never know the names of the songs. So, like, you know, it's like we'd have a set list, and, you know, some of the guys, they've been playing in the band for a long time. But Zane's been in the band in some cases as long as some of the other guys. And I would name a song, and Zane would just be like, which one's that? And I'd be like, ah, that's one in G. You're like, which one in G? You know, it's just like.
Did you know, do that during shows?
He would sometimes, the funny thing is nobody would notice it, but he would whisper to me sometimes, like, which one's this one? And I'll be like, you'll hear it. Because I knew his ears were so immaculately perfect that he would hear a song maybe 3 years later, play it, and still know the parts. That to me blew my mind. And I would test, I always test the band members. Like, okay, let's pull a song from the vault in rehearsal. And Zane would not have played it for, you know, years. And he would just fumble around for the first, you know, couple bars. And then all of a sudden he'd hit one note and it would just trigger all the rest. And he would have the part down. And it was like, you know, I would always tease him. I'm like, man, I don't know how you do that, but keep doing it, because you don't have to learn the names of the songs if you just keep doing that.
Wow.
And, you know, it was a testament to his ear. I mean, like, the one thing that I learned about Zane was he had this incredible ability to just light up any part of the song where he was playing. But it was also, like, he had this intense ear. Like, he would just hear things in the song, either a part that was, you know, something that was there that should have been there, and we just haven't rehearsed it, and he knew the part. But there was also times, like, you know, where he would just fly by the seat of his pants, and it would work, you know? Like, it never didn't work. There was one show, we played the NAMM show, you know, which is, yeah, like this big, I think we talked about, yeah, the NAMM, yeah, show. Yeah. So the NAMM show was, like, a big deal to play, and it was, like, a huge, oh, my God, we're playing the NAMM show. And the whole band, we all got there early, and we're playing, and we're setting up. And the guy comes up to us, he's like, okay, you guys got to start, but Zane's not on the stage yet. And Zane sends me a text, just parked. You know, like, I'm like, okay, all right. So we start this song, and, like, you know, we see Zane come out of the elevator, like, way down the hall, you know? And he just, like, you see your band on the stage, you would probably run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like the, yeah, okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm late. I should probably run. And it was so funny. Like, he just walked. He coasted up to the stage, just, and he had this cool walk, like this cool jazz saxophonist walk. And he just, like, got up on the stage, got his mouthpiece out, and literally he played right where he was supposed to play. Like, he walked under the stage, put his mouthpiece on, and just played right where his entrance was supposed to be. You know, and I just looked at him, and he just, like, gave me a little look, like, yeah, man, that was planned, you know. And I remember my bass player, Matt, was like, welcome to the show, Zane, you know, like, glad you could join us, you know. So, you know, it was just one of those things where he just always, he just kind of coasted yeah, in. And,
well, it's like, it's weird, like, I mean, that's some depression shows you, like, certain things that we would find so difficult, it comes easy, but just, like, normal life is so difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, I guess you're right. It's a kind of like the obstacle of just, like, simple functioning
parts. Stuff we take for granted.
Right.
is what the day-to-day stuff.
Like, give me an example, like something, because I never think about that stuff, you know what I mean?
Well, just like leaving your house, just getting out of bed.
Becomes an ordeal.
Becomes an ordeal.
Right.
You know, just sitting alone in a room with your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, can those, be overwhelming. Those are things I never think, you know, when I,
unless you've experienced actual depression, you don't know.
Well, I've experienced, not on, maybe on that level.
Not on that level.
I mean, but that's what made me pick up a guitar. And that's actually what continues me to keep playing guitar. It's therapy for me. I mean, it really is. It's like whenever I'm in that dark hole, music became this therapy. And I think Zane was like that too. That's what made him so great as a musician. Scott Morrison, our road manager, just walked in the room. I invited some friends to just talk about Zane Moussa. I was talking about at NAMM. You were actually there. When we played NAMM and everybody was on stage except for Zane, he had just parked. Yeah. And do you remember him just walking to the stage like cool as a bear in a pool? And he just, you know, like he walked onto the stage and it was a place to go. I remember when it opened. And he put his mouthpiece on and he just played right where he was supposed to be. Yeah. It was like nothing was out of the ordinary.
Like it was no big deal. He was just showing up super late to a gig.
And it was a big gig, dude. It was like, you know, like, oh shit, this is NAMM, you know? And, I'm sure the audience was like, who just walked onto the stage?
Sure. Is there a crazy pipe walking on stage? Just with
is he with the band or is he the bouncer, you know? I just remember he played his ass off that gig. And afterwards, he like the first thing he says, you know, he's like, dude, I'm sorry I was late. And that like warmed my heart. I was like, how could you ever be mad at a guy that plays his ass off, walks on stage right when he needs to be there, and then afterwards apologizes? And he was sincere about it. He's like, I'm so sorry I was late, man. I was like, dude, you weren't. You were actually,
right on time.
You were
perfectly on time.
Ridiculous. But, you know, that's what I loved about him. Scott, why don't you share a funny Zane moment that you've had? I know we had a lot.
One thing I always thought was hilarious about Zane, he's always the last one to show up and the first one to leave in the best way possible. And not because he was being a jerk or trying to diss everybody else, because he had like 9 gigs in the same night.
Yeah.
Right? And so like he was coming from one gig. He'd show up, just like you were saying at NAMM, he'd show up like at the precise moment to stand in and play his lines, right? And he'd try and duck out like in the last 2 minutes of a song, right? Like we'd be jamming like super hard and he would just try to dip out like and not say anything because he had some late night jazz gig he had to go to.
And you know what? I mean, like he did it. He played all the notes he was supposed to. Oh, you know what I mean? So it was like
my part's over. I'm done.
Yeah. And you know what? The one thing I always remember about him, and it's weird to even think that I'll never hear him say it, but like whenever he left, he'd always say, in a minute. In a minute. Do you remember that?
Always.
Always. He'd always say, in a minute. He'd give you like, and I'd be like, yeah, man, cool. I think I'm going to start adopting that because I just like – I want to remember him all the time. He's one of my favorite people on the planet. I'm going to play another tune real quick. This is a song called Garden of Dreams, and I remember having him do the saxophone solo for this, and it was extraordinary. I mean like literally I was like, okay, man, I want you to kind of build the sax solo so that the end, it just kind of peaks. You know, like you peak into the end. You know, instead of like usually you have a solo, you peak in the middle and then you kind of bring it down and then you come. Yeah. But I said, for this song, it's your future. But I want you to kind of like build it, peak towards the end. And then we're out. You know what I mean? Just so it's a little bit more exciting. And he's like, all right, yeah, I got it. And I was like, OK, cool. So I had him do a take and then he listened to it and he was like, that's it. That's cool, man. And I was like, man, he just nailed that on one take. One take. And honestly, I couldn't say it was perfect. I was like, cool, man. Let's go to the next song. I was like, okay. So this is a song called Garden of Dreams. This features Zane Moussa on the saxophone. I wanted to kind of build his solos for the night. But listen to his solo at the end of this. It's one of the most beautiful things. I was so honored to have this solo on the record. And you'll see why. This is Garden of Dreams. Not a sound, the night surrounds you. What lies beneath these hungry eyes is just to meet you. In this fire, my hands beseech you. Running wild in their desire, they learn to need you. Such a fate is the brim of hope.
make the lonely child inside me hide the load. I see your face and I know love's here dancing around you. There's no more space, needs a fail. Love's here in this garden of dreams. Lots of time can mean to catch the fire of every passing mile. Through our roots, connecting stories, I learn to seek your thoughts with words we only swallow. Then I see your face and I know love's here dancing around you. There's no more space, needs a fail. Love's here. In this garden where the trail leads back to you. All this time it's been about only you. Mistakes, but you medicate me with the beauty you embrace. Then I see your face and I know love's here dancing around you. There's no more space, you need to fail. Love's here in this garden. I see your face and I know love's here in this garden of dreams.
My God, I mean, I just got chills thinking about that, the way he did that little, like, ascending line. I mean, it's just, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was just genius. I was like, I want you to peak towards the end. So he starts low and does this sliding, ascending line. And, like, even when he was doing it, I was like, oh, man, he's not going to hit those last couple notes. And because we're doing everything on analog tape, if you record on Pro Tools, if you record on computers, yeah. If he doesn't hit the right note, you can go right to the point where he doesn't hit the right note and have him play it over and then just, you know, link them together, and you know, you kind of cheat.
Yeah.
With tape, you can't really. I mean, you really can't do that. And if you can cut it up and do it in a really like arduous way, but it never sounds completely right. So when he was doing that ascending line, I remember looking at him like, I gave him this look like, oh shit, are you gonna hit those notes? And man, when he hit those notes, he just like stood there and he was like, what'd you think? And I was like, come on in, dude, let's listen to it. And he listened to it and he was like, it was unbelievable. You know, one of the things I learned about recording with Zane was it really made you more present, you know, because you couldn't just dick around and like leave him to do nothing in the studio a while. You know, there's always lulls when you record, yeah. You know, like you're working on things. And I learned like I had to always make sure like we were on top of our game.
Yeah, you have to elevate yourself.
Yeah, so he could be on top of his game. So there was this one moment where we were recording on this tape machine, and there was a flutter on the tape, And so we ended up going to another studio. Like, he just laid down all the stuff, and we had to redo everything. Which to me, like, if I'm going through it, and I was going through it, but I wasn't the player, it was devastating. Because it was like, oh my God, we're going to have to redo all the things that we just did that were right. So we went to this studio called Entourage Studios in the middle of North Hollywood, and it was in the middle of the night, and it was just he and I. I'll never forget this for the rest of my life. And, you know, I set up the tape, and I was like, okay, Zane, we're going to have you do this solo. I'm going to have you play on a song called A Song for L.A., and I'm going to have you play a solo on it. And he was like, okay, cool, man. And I'm like, all right. So I had him play this solo, and, like, he's like, just count me in, man. I don't know, like, count me in and count me out, you know, depending on, you know, where the in and the out is. Like, that's the thing about Zane. We never had, like, the bars mapped out, but, you know, he was always flying by the seat of his pants. You know this, Scott. Like,
yeah, all the time.
I'm sure he was always asking you for drink tickets, too.
Always asking for drink tickets, always asking if I got him a beer. I'm like, dude, I got you covered. Like, I know the deal, bro. You showed up, like, we're 5 minutes into the set. I got a beer on stage waiting for you.
He couldn't wait. Whenever there was a song that he wasn't playing, you just see him dart up the House of Blues stairs, yeah. Go to the room, come back with like two or three drinks, and just like, you know, he'd be partying. But for this song, you know, like I remember counting him in, and I was sweating bullets because I was on a different tape machine that I didn't know how to use completely. And if I erased anything he did, you know, either previously or even then, it was just a pain in the ass to have to redo it. You know, like overdubs on a tape machine are just a little bit trickier than overdubs on a computer. Mm-hmm. So I remember counting him in, and he laid down this monstrous solo. And in the middle, like, you know, he didn't count. He didn't get himself where he wanted the out to be. So it was, like, the most incredible solo. And he's like, all right, man, just let me do it again. Now, for me to have him do it again would mean I'd have to erase everything he just did. And I sat there, and I'm like, Zane, dude, that was – there's a lot of amazing stuff in here. I can't just erase this. And he's like, and he looked, man, he gave me this look I'll never forget. And it wasn't angry, but he looked into me. He looked straight into me, and he was like, roll the tape, man. And I knew, I was like, all right. I knew in this moment, I was like, I'm just going to trust him. I'm going to give him complete trust that he'll be able to do something that's as good as this. And I pushed record, and I'll never forget the feeling that I had listening to him play this saxophone solo. It was a soprano saxophone solo. And it was a rush. I mean, it was literally a rush to watch him record this and to watch him play. And there were things about his, like, his body language and, like, what he was thinking about and what he was playing. It was mind-blowing to me. I was like, and I've worked with a lot of musicians. I've seen a lot of sessions. I've played guitar solos in the sessions. But to watch this guy, it was like watching a masterwork. It was really like a beautiful, and nobody was there. It was just me and him, and I was just like, "This is some serious shit." And it was just it's the most beautiful solo I think that's ever been on any track in NK Band, you know, any NK Band music. To be honest, that's how strongly I feel about it. And he came into the room, and Zane was never he was never really easy on himself when he listened back to something he did. So, you know, I was playing it for him, and I knew. I was like, that was the most insane fucking solo I've ever heard in my life. And he listened to it, and, like, he was, like, smiling without smiling. You know, I could see that he was pleased for once, like, this one little moment. And he's like, yeah, man, that's the one. And I just, like, looked at him. I was like, no shit, you think? You know? And I remember him... packing up to leave, and he was packing up his sax, and, like, Zane was not very outspoken about what he was playing or, you know, who he was playing with, really. He was very just humble to himself, you know, and I remember he packed up, and he was walking out the studio, and I was like, I think I was rewinding the tape so, you know, I could take it off the heads, and I saw him out of the corner of my eye. He started walking out, and then he just turned around, and he was like, Nicky, I really love your music, man. Like, I love playing with you. And I just want you to know, we got a good thing. We got a really good thing. And like, honestly, it just touched my heart so deep. Because I never knew until that moment, like, how he really felt about the band or playing, you know, on this record. Because I never just asked the musicians sometimes. Like, you can tell. And his body language was always like, yeah, I'm having a good time, you know. But he was like, man, I really love your vocals. I really love the songs. I really love the songwriting, the arrangements, the band. I love everything. It's a really fun band to play. And I really dig it. And I want you to know that. And I was so moved by it that I couldn't say anything back. And I was just like, man, we're going to rule the world someday. You know, I paused. And I was like, we're going to rule the world someday. And, you know, he got a taste of it, which I loved. Like, we played that show with Ben Harper in front of 10,000 people. We played tons of House of Blues shows together. And we experienced that together. And I never would have been able to have as much fun in those shows as I did if he wasn't in the band. But this song, it's just uber special to me. It's very special. The soprano sax solo is unbelievably special to me. He was a big catalyst to getting a lot of the band members to sing harmonies, and that's what made the song. You know, I did a lot of the harmonies on the record just because that's my only opportunity to sing harmonies, but I always loved singing with them. I got one of those few and rare opportunities that most musicians ever got to sing with Zane Musa. You know, everybody heard him play, but not everybody got to sing with him, and that was a very special thing for me. So this song I'm going to play is called A Song for L.A. I wanted to end on this song. Scott, is there anything you want to say about Zane?
Man, I think, just to touch on what you were saying, he's never outspoken about much at all.
And very outspoken at the same time.
And very outspoken at the same time. I mean, like, he would just give you a look, and the look alone just was like a million words right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Whether it was on stage, off stage, in the studio, it didn't matter what it was. And it's like, it didn't matter if it was like he did something and he knew he did something wrong, or he did something and he knew it was just, he just did something so right that it was like next level for everybody in the room, and everyone just stood there and was like, I don't even know what just happened, but that was the shit right there. Whatever you just did, that was it.
You know, when I first heard the news about Zane, I mean, it really floored me. You know, it was devastating news for me. And I always knew that he had more light. He just had more light in him than more any human I'd ever seen, really. And I always just think of like a shooting star. Like, some people just have more light and they just burn so fast and so bright that it's just like they become this beautiful phenomenon. And to me, that's what he was. And Zane, I love you and I miss you, and I will always remember you, and I'll always savor playing music with you. So thank you. Thank you for being in the band. This one's called A Song for LA.
Trying to find my way, tick-tock, watch the clock, flip me over, I'm done. Threw me into school, try to play it cool. Don't push me out too far until I find my guitar. What can I chase? Darkness only, give up the gray. Turn it into speak your own mind. My message won't be clear without the music inside. City lights combined, what's vision to see the lines? We all come from the same tree, but allow our fears to decide. When can I chase darkness away? Give up the gray. Sun and sun, a song for your song, this is your song.
the light to see burn until your race to divide. Find the light inside, the pain of every sin. What keeps you lost in your head is a lie you think is dead. When can I chase darkness away? Can I give up the grave? Turn it into a song for Adelaide.
Thank you guys for tuning in to Wake Up Hollywood. I'm Eddie Pence for Nikhil Kurula. If you are out there and you are depressed, please get help. Take care, everybody.